You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for November 20th, 2015. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from the red carpet premiere of Whatever Happened to Ebola Terrorist Anchor Baby Jane, it's The Professional Left with Drift Glass and Blue Gal.
Hey there, Drift Glass.
Hey, Blue Gal.
Rough week.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say that, rough week. And I want to thank you, Drift Glass, for the many times this week when you have pulled me away from social media.
Yes, yes. I had to put my foot down.
When you...
The man.
No, that's not it. You just know my emotional state. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all week long, I've been channeling Otto in A Fish Called Wanda. I just look at my computer and go, assholes! Every Republican governor who's thinking they have the power, first of all, to turn away refugees, and secondly, think that that's going to do any good or any, you know, is somehow feeding into safety for their people.
That's weird, because I've been channeling Jamie Lee Curtis from A Fish Called Wanda. You know, the central tenet of Buddhism is not every man for himself.
Exactly.
Jesus, what is wrong with you alleged Christians out there?
Exactly. The central tenet of Christianity isn't keep the strangers away from you.
Quick, lift the drawbridge.
Yeah.
Throw the boiling oil over the walls and keep them, the three-year-old Ebola babies, the hell out of my country.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's not it. So I think everyone who's listening to this is on board with that.
Yeah.
I've been glad to see, and I know that my Facebook and Twitter streams are self-selected.
Yes.
But people really are pushing back on this. I'm proud of Chris Hayes. He's been really good. He went to Paris. You know, he looked around and people are outside and people are standing up to this and saying, no, we're going to take refugees. We're not going to let ISIS win. We're not going to let them win.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't need to sort of intellectually masturbate about this anymore. It's just not, it's the right thing to do to take care of refugees.
Well, and we posted our podcast last week before the attacks in Paris happened.
Yeah, exactly. So. And I was already talking about, you know, the refugees from World War II, the Jewish refugees. That was on last week's show. It kind of scared me a little bit that, oh, you know, we were already talking about the Saint Louis and people being turned away at the border of the United States last week.
Out of fear.
Out of fear.
Fear and racism. And,
Yep. So it was true last week and it's true this week.
And we're not going to, I mean, there's nothing special we can add to the already wall-to-wall, floor-to-ceiling round-the-clock coverage that every news station has already given this all over the world. So, but we will talk a little bit about what has happened in this country as a result of those attacks.
Well, and as we usually do, look at what the media is doing.
Yeah.
And the same mistakes are being made that were made after 9/11.
Yeah.
Of, you know, well, we got to go to war. We got to go to war. And you said at lunch yesterday the Cold War predictability of this. It's just, I'm going to use that word I used to use all the time and stopped using. It's astonishing.
It is. It is. It is completely predictable exactly how the right would react.
Mm-hmm.
It is completely predictable. I read somewhere today, baffling the conventional beltway wisdom. Here's an expression we should burn to the ground and then bury its remains out back and then salt that ground is beltway conventional wisdom.
Yeah.
Because the beltway is always wrong about everything. So the beltway conventional wisdom that after Donald Trump called Iowans stupid, he'd just fall off the radar. No.
Or insult John McCain's service in the military. Yep. Yes. Yep. Yes.
But the most recent one was when he went on this long rant about Ben Carson, dared someone to stab him to prove that stabbing someone in the belt doesn't cause a miracle to occur, and generally called Iowans and Americans stupid for falling for Ben Carson's shtick. that was going to be the end of Donald Trump. You know, we can all agree that we predicted this wrong all along, that, you know, after this and this and this and this, but this, literally insulting the people you're asking to vote for you, will certainly spell the doom of Donald Trump, who is now up like 12 points in the polls. Because what is Donald Trump's central issue? Racism and walling off the country. And he has spent the last 3 days channeling Rush Limbaugh.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Barack Obama is a threat. Barack Obama is an active threat to this country. He's trying to destroy America, and we need to bomb everyone and wall ourselves off and shoot at anything that moves, essentially. And you know what? The Republican Party loves that shit.
Oh, yeah.
Loves that talk. This is what gets them hard. They haven't been able to get it up for 7 years. Now, finally, they have someone, you know, shrieking at the top of their lungs about bombing people and shutting the borders. And finally, someone is speaking to them directly to their id, straight to it. And so, surprise, surprise, he's up in the polls. And everyone else is falling in line behind him. Who can be more extreme? Who can be more ridiculous? Who can be more crazy? Right down the line. So all of that was predictable. And that's what's sad about it. The Republican Party is now completely automated.
Yeah.
You plug in these factors, and what pops out is Barack Obama is a monster who personally invented ISIS to destroy America. And he wants to let terrorists into our country, if he hasn't already, to kill your children.
Yeah.
And the only way to solve this is blowing the shit out of some stuff and walling the country off from the rest of the world. And that's it. There is no more. If you add tax cuts and deregulation to that, that's the Republican Party.
Yeah.
So surprise, surprise.
Moving on, I want to talk about Ben Carson's foreign policy experience.
Sure, because we could use a laugh now.
Right.
We certainly could use a laugh.
Well, and his geography abilities as well, with his map of the United States showing Maine being some maritime province of Canada out there, you know, way up off the coast of Newfoundland. And we can talk about Kasich as well, because Kasich had this wonderful idea of, you know, using a government office for exporting Judeo-Christian values via the government, which... is unconstitutional on so many levels. And Bush already tried this. The Office of Faith-Based Initiative was his thing. And it only took 8 months for the person put in charge of that to quit.
Right.
Because it was so clearly a slush fund for Bush's Christianist friends to get money for their pet projects.
Now, that office is still there.
Oh, sure.
And you once you create
even,
that, you
even Obama couldn't get rid of it because that would make him look like, you know,
Antichrist.
Right into the Antichrist. Mm-hmm. Sure. But these ideas come along. And this is what I wanted to talk about with Ben Carson, because the connection between Ben Carson and ISIS, and I don't want to be too nasty about this, but there is a cult formation kind of thing going on here. Where we take Ben Carson, when I say we, I mean Ben Carson's supporters, we take him on faith.
Right.
Because he is in our tribe, because he is an evangelical, we take him on faith. And he, because he's one of us, everything he does must be right. This was exactly why Bush got away with so much, was he's a good Christian man. You know, and it didn't matter what he did.
Right.
It was who he was in your mythology that mattered. And Ben Carson is as much of a end world.
Apocalyptic.
Apocalyptic. But I mean that in the sense of revelation,
right.
Not in the sense of kill yourself.
Right.
Because I don't think there's a suicide bombing aspect to Ben Carson.
No.
But there is a... this world doesn't matter. You know, we are all united in the fact that we're going to be lifted up into heaven during the rapture rather than, you know, having to deal with life on earth or reality. Middle child and I were driving to school the other day and saw this was so funny because she mentioned it. A Stop Planned Parenthood, Join the Movement at BenCarson.com bumper sticker.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, oh, my God, it's like Planned Parenthood doesn't stop abortion. Of course they stop abortion. They give out birth control.
Yes.
And
yes.
She's 13 and she understands
yes.
that. You know?
Well, this, and I believe when we chatted about this, this is when I said, this is what happened to all the people during the zombie apocalypse who tried to reason with the zombies and say, maybe you shouldn't eat people's brains. Maybe it's a bad idea. Maybe you shouldn't attack me. They're all gone now. The people who poked them in the head with a screwdriver, they survived.
They're the ones that survived that went, boom.
Now, I'm not saying anything violent. I'm trying to say, it is so clearly and obviously and self-evidently true that Planned Parenthood helps reduce abortions because they're helping to plan your parenthood
up to,
especially in terms of education and contraception. That if you are opposed to abortions, you would want to support an organization that helps prevent pregnancies.
And on the flip side of that, Driftglass,
yes,
Dr. Ben Carson did experiments on fetal tissue.
Yes, he did.
So.
And none of that counts.
Shut up. He's a good Christian man.
None of that counts.
No?
None of it registers at all because the zombie brain has, you know, the normal brain has shut down a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the zombie brain is now just actively pursuing, you know, any bumper sticker that will harmonize with the voices of Rush Limbaugh in their heads. Mm-hmm. And there's no point, I hate to beat this, but there is no point in trying to argue with these people anymore.
Well, and it's stop Planned Parenthood because we love babies, but no 3-year-old Syrian refugee orphan can come to our shores and live here.
And,
you know, this is
again,
the stupidity of it.
Well, it's the predictability of it. It's okay, what happens if you corner one of these people and ask them about these contradictions? They're going to yell, Kenyan usurper,
mm-hmm.
birth certificate, Barack Obama hates America, you're a dirty liberal, and skulk away.
Yeah.
Now, I'm all in favor of – this is why I published a quick history of ISIS on my website,
mm-hmm.
The history of Daesh, not because I thought it would change anyone's mind, mind you. And it's not very hard to understand. It's very well documented, and it's you can look it up anywhere, and it's very simple. Once upon a time, L. Paul Bremer, the viceroy of Iraq under George Bush,
mm-hmm.
fired the Iraqi army.
Yeah.
On that day, he created the internal resistance movement in Iraq. This effectively doomed any possibility that the occupation and rebuilding of Iraq would ever go well. And that was gigantic mistake number one. So the Bush administration created the resistance, created the framework, created an army of well-armed, unemployed, dispossessed men who had no choice but to take up arms against us. And then a few years later, we got our sock puppet government under Nouri al-Maliki elected, and he worked with us for a while. There was an Iraqi awakening movement in Iraq, but then he had a sign under George Bush, not under Barack Obama, under George Bush, a status of forces agreement telling us to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason we were leaving is because, unlike every place else the American military is, he preconditioned an occupation force on the premise that American soldiers would be tried in Iraqi courts.
Right,
and
right.
Ain't no way that's ever going to happen. And the reason he did that is because he is beholden to the nation of Iran. He spent a lot of years in Iran. He owes them big. And this was the one thing Iran would not tolerate was American troops inside of Iraq. So he, our handpicked sock puppet government, which George Bush created, kicked the American army out. And then he turned around and undid all the work that you and I and our billions of taxpayer dollars had done to rebuild the Iraqi army. He gutted them again. He fired the officers, including West Point graduates. He essentially repeated exactly the same purges that Paul Bremer had done once again. This makes essentially any internal resistance movement killed it and created the conditions for ISIS specifically. That's the history of how these people came to be in Iraq. There mm-hmm. are more complicated attachments to other countries like Syria, but that's the history. The reason I wrote that on my website was not because I thought it would persuade anyone, because there's not a conservative in the world who I believe at this late date is persuadable by fact. Mm-hmm. It is simply because, like the Cornerstone speech in the American Civil War, Alexander Stevens' Cornerstone speech, where he explicitly says that the reason the Confederacy exists is because slavery is an awesome Christian institution. The reason I keep that in my hip pocket, the reason I keep the Articles of Secession, where each seceding state says specifically the reason we're quitting the Union is slavery, is because at some point some asshole is going to pop up and say, well, yeah, Civil War had nothing to do with slavery. And then you can slap the shit out of them with this in your hand. You're not going to change their mind, because these people never change their mind. But they will go away. They will leave you alone and go find some more gullible person to yell at. So having a short and comprehensible history of how things got this fucked up in Iraq, with the word George Bush, George Bush, George Bush all over it, is useful, because it's not going to persuade anyone. Everyone's going to hate the Kenyan usurper. They're going to blame Barack Obama for the Great Depression and everything else. So that's not going to change any minds, but it will at least signal to them that, oh, shit, here's one who actually knows what went on. I'll go on to a softer target someplace else, and they'll leave you alone. But it's 2015, and we as liberals have to get over the fact that we're going to persuade these people of anything. They can't be persuaded anymore. They can be defeated. They can be electorally crushed, but they can't be reasoned with. Which is why.
Well, and I think the predictability, the thing that sort of keeps me calm in the midst of all this social media BS, is it'll be something else 8 months from now.
Yeah.
And, you know, hopefully it won't be another attack, because that does put a big, huge hammer in Donald Trump's hand.
Well, and that's
to make people afraid.
That's why we mentioned, you know, Ebola anchor babies at the top.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which was because that. That does the opposite for me. It makes me depressed.
Yeah.
Because it will always be something else.
Yeah.
There will always be some other made-up crisis, either real or invented, which will be Barack Obama's fault, who's a threat and hates America, and liberals are really behind it all forever. Until these people are, wander off, into their graves at some future date. And so they slowly fade away until the generational change just grinds them and makes them disappear.
Well, I want to talk for a moment about Chris Matthews and relate it to that, because I think one of the ways to counter this is to show that side, call them on their bluffs, call Donald Trump on his craziness, and say, all right, so this is what you want. You want to deport 11 million people. You want to have a war in Syria. Et cetera, et cetera. You want to keep refugees out and so forth. Mm-hmm. And Chris Matthews has been the past few days on this insane tear of why won't Syrians fight for their country? And looking at their able-bodied men in actually taking care of their wives and children amongst the refugees. Hello.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't understand why the Syrians won't go fight for their country. And he actually doubled down last night and said, like the South Vietnamese did, which just floored me that is his understanding of history of the Vietnam War.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Really? Okay. And, of course, this is and I'm not criticizing him for joining the Peace Corps during Vietnam at all.
No.
I'm not, except that it makes him a goddamn hypocrite.
Yeah.
And so I think if this is where that side of the political spectrum is going to go, we need to have a really serious conversation about a permanent military draft in the United States. Because this is how many soldiers it's going to take. This is what the Joint Chiefs say it's going to take to occupy Syria. We're going to have to occupy Syria if we're going to do this.
Uh-huh.
And here's how many troops it's going to take. We can build a coalition, but this is how many American troops it's going to take. And this is how many we have. So whose son is going to go?
Mm-hmm.
Chris Matthews doesn't have a son, which is another reason he can be flapping the lip on this. But, I think once you start having a serious conversation on a debate stage with, hey, Donald Trump, how many young American men are you willing to pull away from their video games and send to Syria?
Oh, we don't have to do, we don't have to do that. No, no, no. Yeah. No, you don't.
It'll be terrific.
We're going to negotiate.
We're going to replace the U.S. Army with Saudi troops, and it's going to be terrific. Yeah, it'll be somebody else. The Mexicans will build the wall.
Yeah,
and you know, we'll see who buys that and who doesn't.
Well, and that's there was a phrase you used that I think is admirable, but I think has become obsolete, mm-hmm. which is calling them out.
Yeah.
There's no calling these people out anymore because they don't have any shame anymore.
I think there is a wide swath of the American electorate that doesn't pay attention to politics.
Yeah, they're called non-voters.
Huh?
They're called non-voters.
Non-voters, but okay, if there's a military draft and legalized pot and a minimum wage increase on the ballot, are they going to be non-voters? That's the question.
You can get legalized pot on the ballot because, yeah, love that. Yeah. No one's ever going to put a draft on the ballot. But if it's in the
debate conversation, then it is on the ballot. That's what I'm saying is, if you make this war talk about here's how many troops Donald Trump's plan is going to take,
mm-hmm.
Then it is on the ballot.
I would like to try that. Mm-hmm. I would love to see if it works. Having the Bush administration spend the same $1 trillion twice.
Yeah.
Basic math was public knowledge, and no one, mm-hmm. Paul Krugman called it out.
Yep.
Having the same bullshit run a second time by Paul Ryan, we're going to cut, and increase military spending and cut taxes, and everything's going to be great. Once again, called out by Paul Krugman, once again, ignored by the entire Beltway media, and mm-hmm. Paul Ryan is now the Speaker of the House.
Yeah.
There is no one in Chris Matthews' chair who's interested in having a conversation about the true cost of anything.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
ratings.
Because ratings and the people who advertise on our show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't want to start talking about how many, you know, when General Shinseki explained exactly how many troops it would cost to occupy Iraq,
mm-hmm.
he disappeared.
Yeah.
Nobody on the right wants to have this conversation. And that's the problem. If the right simply locks arm and goose steps and says we're not going to acknowledge that our numbers are ludicrous, there's nobody who's going to call them out. Chuck Todd?
Yeah.
You know, these people are all fucking cowards.
It's idiocracy pointing at the TV saying, I don't want that. Yeah. I want that. I want safety rather than reality.
And
yep.
Instead, what you're going to get, and this is I'm in the middle of writing this post, so you'll forgive me for mentioning this, but the closest you're going to get from the Beltway to criticizing anything today, and I'm please bear with me, New York Post, John Podhoretz, both Obama and the GOP sound ridiculous discussing ISIS.
Both sides.
Inevitable Ron Fournier. Shame on us and our quote-unquote leaders in both parties.
Yeah.
And Bush administration mouthpiece, Mike Gerson, wrote a very thoughtful column on how blanket anti-Muslim bigotry is bad for us.
Wow.
It causes blowback, and it's a bad thing, and we shouldn't just have this. We shouldn't tolerate this kind of all Muslims are bad, we're at war with Islam talk, because it actually makes us less safe. Who does he blame for this conversation?
Both sides.
Generic group of people called American politicians.
Yeah.
The word Republican and conservative is never mentioned by him because he doesn't want to wake up with a horse head in his bed.
Yeah.
We can until the center is destroyed and until we can actually have the conversation that you and I both want to have, it's inside baseball among liberals. Liberals talking to liberals. The moment now, here's where I completely do agree with you, which is almost all the time, you beautiful woman, you. is on the debate stage between the two major candidates. That's mm-hmm. the moment when Mitt Romney stepped on the biggest rake in modern history and started quoting Breitbart bullshit.
Yep.
But it took the moderator to call him out on it.
Yes, it did.
And she basically lost her job because of that.
Mm-hmm.
Or she certainly mm-hmm. was vanished. And the right and the reaction of the right when Mitt Romney chided Barack Obama for something that was completely made up by the right because that's all he was reading. The reaction from the right was, how dare you?
Yeah.
How dare you stick your big liberal nose in the middle of our debate? If you mention facts, you're a dirty, dirty liberal. And dirty, dirty liberals are not allowed on television. So you have this deeply screwed up circle jerk going on where everyone knows the truth and no one talks about it.
Mm-hmm.
And when they do, they're fired.
Yep.
And I don't know how to break it open other than to just keep banging away at it every week, which is what we do, and asking all of our liberal friends and listeners to, you know, keep every time you see a both siderist bullshit, email me, which is what a lot of people do these days, and just keep banging away. I have great hopes over the long term.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
in the short term, you know, I didn't believe George Bush would be elected, and he was.
Yeah.
I would love to believe that this country isn't apathetic / stupid enough to elect Donald Trump.
Uh-huh.
We might be just frightened enough and just apathetic enough and just dumb enough to elect someone like Donald Trump as president. We might.
I used to not care who the Republican nominee was.
Yeah.
And now I'm to the point where, no, America matters enough. and the two-party system, you know, as imperfect as it is, It's not good for our country to have only one party be sane.
Well, why don't you talk about $12 versus $15? Because that's right.
That dovetail into that. And also my prescience again last week,
mm-hmm.
Before the Democratic debate, talking about Hillary Clinton and 9/11 and her obvious, really bad moment there on the debate to say, oh, well, you know, the reason I support Wall Street is 9/11. Wait a minute, you know. But as I said in an earlier podcast,
mm-hmm.
really, that is the reason that she supports Wall Street. And she sort of misspoke the truth there, which is she was the senator from New York.
Yeah.
And if she had been the senator from Montana on 9/11, it would be a completely different story. I'm not making excuses for her, because you are going to have a more corporate Democrat if she is the nominee.
Yep.
We've got to stop the Republicans from taking the White House under any circumstances. And that is my position.
Mm-hmm.
I will be voting in the general election for this exact same person, I hope, that Bernie Sanders votes for. So,
yes.
And if it's Bernie Sanders, awesome. But I wanted to talk about this specific issue of 12 versus 15.
I think on some future podcast, we might have to explain to some people, not most people, but some people. How a primary process works.
Yeah. You know, it's okay. I did say this to Shock on Twitter. It uh-huh. is okay to vote your heart in the primaries.
Yes.
That's what primaries are for.
Yes.
You are allowed to do that.
You were a Kucinich girl.
I was Kennedy 80.
Yeah.
That was a sitting Democratic president
uh-huh.
that I, you know, made phone calls against.
Yep.
And so the party unity, my ass, I played that violin.
And as I mentioned,
35 years ago.
While you were on the East Coast trying to destroy the Carter presidency from within, I was in the Midwest trying to elect a third party candidate, and I'm John Anderson. Because, you know, both candidates, really, the left and the right, there's really not a dime's worth of difference between Jimmy mm-hmm. Carter and Ronald Reagan. I mean, neither one is telling me exactly what I want to hear. So
and I were young.
Yeah. And which brings
I was back, too young to vote. I think that was your first vote, wasn't it?
It was my first election.
See, you're a couple years older than I am.
I decided to throw it away. So Reagan is my fault, and everything after that you can blame at least partially on me. But the point being, you and I have been to the Purity Rodeo a few times already.
And ridden that cow. We have done that.
And we have seen this every friggin' election. You know, whether it's Glenn Greenwald, again, I'm not breaking an embargo. I occasionally do still talk about Mr. Greenwald. Getting up and telling people, you know, maybe Democrats should just stop voting for Democrats for a while and let Republicans win a few elections. And you have to give up some of your short-term political, you know, desires, I suppose. But it'll teach them a lesson. It'll teach them a lesson, because if not, you're beholden to them. And really, they're no different than the Republicans. And Dylan Ratigan. Bless his heart, former MSNBC host on, I believe, the Bill Maher show, said, essentially, if I don't get to vote for Bernie Sanders, you shouldn't vote at all, because all you're doing is endorsing a corrupt system.
Or as someone on Facebook said, Hillary Clinton can take her $12 an hour and shove it up her ass.
Right.
And that was on Twitter.
And that brings us back to the 12 versus 15.
I said, excuse me?
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
You're going to tell a Walmart worker in Des Moines, Iowa, to turn up their nose at $12 an hour because purity and we should be fighting for 15.
Mm-hmm.
Really? It gets back to politics versus reality. And, you know, this 12 versus 15 argument is interesting to me because it really does encapsulate a lot of what politics is. And in no way, shape, or form am I suggesting that anyone stop fighting for 15.
No, period. Keep fighting for it.
Hillary Clinton is a deal maker. Yes. And you don't have to like that about her, but it is what has given her power throughout since she was 15 years old.
Yeah.
Okay?
Or 12.
And that's
no,
a long
sure.
time. Yeah. And she's a deal maker. And so what happened with the $12 versus $15?
Minimum wage. Thing, this is the minimum wage.
Minimum wage. Yeah. Minimum wage. Is the Senate, the Democrats in the Senate, and she said this on the debate stage. She mentioned Senate Democrats, and this is why she was supporting 12. Senate Democrats voted unanimously for $12 an hour minimum wage. Every single Democrat voted yes. Harry Reid couldn't get a unanimous vote for 15. Because there are some states in the heartland where 15 is what is really what firefighters make. And it's as much as they can make right now. And politically, it's not possible to go to 15 at this moment.
In certain states.
In certain states. Mm-hmm. And this is what Hillary Clinton was saying on the debate stage, which is it's a floor, not a ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
And so unanimously, they got a vote for 12 out of the U.S. Senate. And, of course, zero Republicans voted in favor of 12.
Yeah.
And you have
Donald
Trump on his debate stage saying wages are too high.
Yeah. People are paid way too much.
Carly Fiorina saying we don't need a minimum wage.
Right.
So there's the contrast. And this, you know, because the Republicans hold the Senate at this point, these are symbolic votes. But that is going to carry into the 2016 campaign of you want a minimum wage that's higher than what you have. There's only one way you can vote. And it's stark.
If you want a minimum wage at all.
At all. There's only one way to vote.
Uh-huh. Sorry.
And it's a stark difference. Mm-hmm. We have a unanimous vote on this. Every single Senate Democrat voted for $12 an hour.
And
Hillary Clinton understands, and I'm not seeing Bernie Sanders. By the way, Bernie Sanders voted yes on 12.
Yes, he did.
Don't forget that. It was unanimous. He voted yes.
And Bernie Sanders gave the answer to single-payer health care. That is exactly the right answer, which is Obamacare is a great idea. It's a great advance. No one should run against it. No one should try to wreck it. However, I think we should go further.
Mm-hmm.
He did not say, I'm going to hold my breath until I turn blue. But I already have health care because I'm a senator. But fuck y'all.
Primary anybody who doesn't want to go single payer today, tomorrow, forever.
Yeah.
And Hillary Clinton also said, you know, I have plenty of battle scars for single payer health care, you know, on my person.
Mm-hmm.
So and she does. She has the scars to prove it that she fought for that.
Now,
I find it deeply offensive that people would and someone did say on Facebook, you know, I don't believe Hillary Clinton when she says she'll do $12 an hour. That's bullshit. She's not the liberal you want, but she's not the monster you are proclaiming her to be.
No. And let me remind you, the person who is going to be standing in the booth next to you on election day, thinks Hillary Clinton murdered Vince Foster.
Yeah.
Thinks that the Clintons ran drugs out of the MENA airport and thinks that they left a trail of corpses behind them on their way to political power and thinks Barack Obama isn't really an American. And if he is, he's under the control of some weird hybrid of ISIS and communism and out to destroy this country. That's the person who's in the voting booth next to you. Now, if you think sitting at home, sucking your thumb and praying for Ralph Nader to return in glory is your best bet to stop the person in that voting booth next to you who wants to make Ted Cruz your president or Donald Trump your president, then by all means, stay home, suck your thumb, feel pure. That's great. You will live to regret it. But I will listen to Bernie Sanders, who is simply saying, his argument is, we all agree in the general direction we should be taking. I am better suited to take us there because I have a longer and more thoroughgoing history of fighting for this all my life, and I have very clear objectives I want to accomplish. I respect that enormously. And if I get a chance to vote for Bernie Sanders for president, I will do so. If I get a chance to vote for Bernie Sanders in a primary, I will do so. But if he doesn't make it, I'm not going to sit at home and bitch because my alternative doesn't give me everything I want.
And we can't be more clear than that.
No.
You know, this is it. This is the future of our country.
Mm-hmm.
And you stay home, you are voting for Ted Cruz or Donald Trump or whatever asshole mm-hmm. that other party puts up. Because right now, that party is crazy.
And if you
and we have to stop them.
And if you think, and really think that doesn't matter, go talk to anyone who's working for minimum wage in this country. Go talk to anyone who's trying to find a job in this country. Go talk to any woman who's trying to get the government the hell out of her vagina in this country mm-hmm. and say, you know, it really doesn't matter if Ted Cruz is president or Hillary Clinton. It doesn't matter who chooses the next Supreme Court and swings the balance in the Supreme Court. All that is just nonsense. You should just, you know, hold your breath, cross your legs, keep working at your shitty job that's getting shittier every until the perfect candidate comes along. Who is against drones, loves weed, and will save this country, and can somehow miraculously transform all the state houses and all the governorships and all the Republicans in Congress so that you can get what you want. Because that's never going to happen until you start digging in at the local level and changing local elected officials. And you know who does that? Pragmatists do that. Politically pragmatic liberals do that.
Apparently bashing Hillary is how you get what you want.
Yeah.
So,
okay. Well, good luck with that.
I actually, someone said that to me on Facebook. I'm not making that up. I'm going to keep bashing Hillary until I get what I want.
Okay.
Until we make change in America. Yeah. Okay.
You keep criticizing her policies and she doesn't have any policies yet because she's not elected anything yet. But if you keep criticizing the leader of your party when they get out of line, great. You know who you'll find right next to you? Me. But if you really do believe that cutting their legs out from underneath them and letting the presidency fall to one of the nine dwarfs on stage in the Republican Party, one of the Fox News employees, if you really think...
I hope you want your son to go to war in Syria, then.
Yeah.
I hope you're willing to go to war in Syria. If you're under 30, I hope you're ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's... Your boots are going to be on the ground. Are you going to miss Bobby Jindal?
I am. Farewell, Bobby. Hey, speaking of David Brooks.
Oh, no. Do we have
to? No. I just want to note that Mr. Brooks took time out. Mr. Brooks, a rabid Iraq war proponent, mm-hmm. a rabid supporter of George Bush's tax cuts, which destroyed the economy and helped destroy the economy and certainly gutted the treasury, whose son is now a proud member of the Israeli army. Managed to find time between his $120,000 New York Times paid for junket to report on what it's like to be a rich person on vacation and his $50,000 speaking fees for talking to people who already agree with him, privileged white people, about how awesome it is to be humble. He took time out from between all of those things to write a column about the importance of contemplating holy texts. And peace can be found not through the secular this and that and not through the humanistic stuff that's failed us all so miserably, but some deep contemplation of this is, you know.
While drinking two bottles of champagne and enjoying Russian caviar in Russia, you should be reading a holy text to make yourself feel good.
He did complain that the pace of his $120,000 New York Times paid for vacation, the mm-hmm. pace was so hectic that he didn't have time to contemplate Paul's thinking as he stood and looked across the Bosporus and drank champagne and ate caviar. So mm-hmm. isn't that very sad? Isn't that very, very
special?
Sad?
Mm-hmm. That's special.
So.
All right. We're running out of time here, Driftglass.
Well, I just want to that was in the service of reminding us all that there are a group of people who hover above all of this. Who are completely untouched by anything that goes on in the mortal world between, you know, among you and I, among people who work for a living, among people who are looking for work for a living, who just sort of float above it all, don't really care, doesn't affect them, go to war, not go to war, tax cuts are great, deregulation is great.
Cut Social Security, fine. Push the retirement age to 70, fine. I have all the money I need.
Republicans do something horrific, and it's probably both sides. Barack Obama probably shares the blame with that. Those people control your media.
Yep.
And until those people stop controlling your media, all you're going to get from them is the same bullshit you've gotten for the last 30 years.
But not here.
Not here, baby. And finally, and most importantly, we would like to hear from you about what you are thankful for.
Yes. Please write us this weekend and let us know in two sentences at proleftpodcast@gmail.com. What you're thankful for. We'll share your letters on the air next week. We'll be recording our podcast, I do believe, on Tuesday.
Probably.
And I think we might even just post it before we leave on Thanksgiving for our turkey dinner.
I think we should do it on the road. I think we should definitely just throw the kids in the car like Beverly Hillbillies and do it live from the road. You know, we stop at every gas station, every place with free Wi-Fi, and this is what we sound like on the road. Shut up, kids.
No. Shut up, kids.
No, okay, we'll play Shut Up and Dance one more time, then y'all have to be quiet.
Everybody be quiet, because Stepdad and Mom are podcasting in the front seat.
Oh, God. Okay, fine.
I have to say, that's one thing I'm grateful for, is the kids do understand that the podcast is important to both of us. And yes, they are quiet when we record when they're home. So.
And they're quietly amazed that these two dorks have people listen to them.
it's true.
But we know you so well. We know that you're both weirdos and jerks. You're lovable. But, Jesus, who would listen to you people? So, good question.
Well, but the funny thing is they are so wired into who they are fans of on YouTube and so forth. So, you know, the Dan and Phil contingent of our children is... You know, they have their internet stars. So they do understand that... You know, mom and stepdad are kind of famous in that way.
Yeah,
so.
Which makes it all the more mysterious. Wait a minute.
Which is
this is impossible.
How did that happen?
Yeah.
It happened by podcasting and blogging for 11 years. That's how
podcasting
it happened.
Every week, blogging every day, making a pest of ourselves. And
I had a conversation this week. It hasn't been posted yet, and I don't know if it will be or not. Mm-hmm. But I did an interview with Mike Carruthers over at Perfect Your Podcast.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I wanted to hear about
Mike
that.
With Mike Carruthers. Uh-huh. He does this Perfect Your Podcast, which is he interviews podcasters about how to make your podcast good or how to make your podcast monetize itself. I think that's really his thing.
How to get rich.
How to get rich with your podcast, or how to improve the quality of your podcast so that you'll make money off of it.
Uh-huh.
And I think he was kind of disappointed in me because I didn't have anything to tell him about that, really. And he made it clear to me, and hopefully he will post this and you'll get to hear me talk about it. One of the themes of our conversation was, look, you guys use naughty language. He didn't use that word. He used explicit. He said, your podcast is explicit.
We mention Republicans by name. That's true. We are explicit about Republicans being the problem. That is true. That's fucking well true.
He said, and I did not swear on his interview, but he said, using explicit language in your podcast, you're already scaring away listeners and advertisers.
Yeah.
So, already, you know, it says explicit in iTunes. That means you are turning away. You're leaving money on the table that you shouldn't be leaving on the table.
Mm-hmm.
And I pointed out to him that David Broder called us vituperative foul-mouthed bloggers of the left back during the Bush years.
We've got a bug.
Badge of honor. That is a badge of honor for those who spoke up during the Bush administration about what was happening and what is happening to our country.
Because unless we yelled at the top of our lungs and swore, nobody paid any attention. Right. We were getting bulldozed every day.
Yep.
And we have a coffee mug here that says...
Vituperative foul-mouthed bloggers of the left on the mug.
On the mug. Damn right.
I had those made up so, myself because I wanted to have one. And then he said, well, are you making money off your podcast? And I told him, you know, I make enough off the podcast to replace. I don't have to substitute teach one day a week. That's what how I look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And it pays the electric bill. You know, the donations that we get are a miracle. Every dime that comes into this podcast from perfect strangers is a miracle to us.
And
we're so grateful for
and it. Imperfect strangers. Let's not
imperfect strangers. Not be. And I did explain the history of the Amazon link, you know, that there was a tax turf war with the state of Illinois and Amazon, and that's over. And so now we do have a monetizing stream from that as well. But I think he was kind of stunned that someone wasn't trying to make $1 million off of the podcast, that wasn't my purpose, was to somehow build some sort of money-making machine out of what we do. And that really isn't my value system.
The professional and left would like to clarify that we would be happy.
We would like to add a zero.
We would be happy to make $1 million or just add a zero to what we're making now. We would like to not disabuse you of the notion of contributing to this podcast or getting your friends to do so, or being very, very generous with us, or buying your Christmas gifts through Amazon so that we can get a cut of that too. But we're not going to change the show.
No, and we're not going to change the show. No. That's the point. And then he asked me, well, so, you know, how much work do you put into fan service and replying to emails and so forth? And I said, I reply to just about every email I get. And again, it was like, whoa.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
So
Lugal does. And thank you notes.
And thank you notes. And trying to get those out this week. You know, I wrote them and they're still sitting on the dining room table getting ready to be mailed because it was so rainy this week.
I did send a batch out this week.
Oh, you did? Yep. You put them in the mail? Yep. Oh, thank you. I was going to go look for those. Thank you.
No, I sent our intern out to do it. And that young man is still not back with my latte.
He's not back with the latte. We sent him to the post office and he never returned.
Yeah. No college credit for you. So, yeah, it is a literal mom and pop shop. And
it's relationship building. Yeah. And, you know, I hope no one feels thoroughly spanked by us if you are really, really, really want Bernie Sanders to be the nominee. And I do, too.
Yeah.
By the way, everybody should go and listen to Nina Turner.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Put a link up for that. That was amazing.
Girl, I tell you, girl, she needs to speak at the Democratic National Convention.
Yeah, in prime time, because that's what a real goddamn
prime
sounds like.
Fucking time. Yep. She needs to be there. Yep. Talking about the wishbone, the jawbone, and the backbone, mm-hmm. because that speech rocked. And that's what a goddamn Democrat sounds like. So go listen to that. That was Nina Turner introducing Bernie Sanders in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. And it was fantastic. Just fantastic. All right. We're going to close it up now.
All right.
Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an Internet Kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's Internet Kitty is Deanie. And Deanie is an expert at the sunny spot finding.
Ah.
She's very good at finding that sunny spot and sitting in it. And that is a very good skill to have as winter approaches.
It's a skill. It's a definite skill.
You know, and that's a metaphor as well.
And then,
find your sunny spot.
And then slowly moving but not waking up to track
no,
the sun.
No, exactly. The sun as it tracks. You can send your Internet Kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com. Where you can also write to both of us. Do write us this week and let us know what you are grateful for. Feel free to write us. We do love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service, Go Postal Unions, letter on the air unless you say otherwise. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage or, you know, a peppermint latte for Christmas for yourself, metaphorically buy one for us with a $5 contribution. And don't forget our Amazon link at our website. Lots of people will be looking at Amazon for those Black Friday and Cyber Monday deals. Please go to our website first and click on the link at Amazon. That gets us a single-digit percentage of your purchase into our pockets, and that helps pay for our Christmas. Mm-hmm. So we appreciate that. We believe in buying local. We also believe in shopping Amazon with our link if your alternative is a big box store.
Mm-hmm.
Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with a contribution, and you guys are just awesome. If you do that, thank you so much. You can do this too. See our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, for details. Both our PayPal and postal address information is there at professionalleft.blogspot.com. If your New Year's resolution is to do more, one of the things you could do is set up a donation to our podcast.
You could.
We would be grateful for that. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Please rate our show on iTunes. And someone asked, how do you rate on Stitcher Radio? It's the thumbs up button down at the bottom where you are listening to our podcast. Give it a thumbs up on Stitcher Radio. And thank you for doing that. So, Driftglass, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
You know, Blue Gal, the Internet Kitties would very much like to insult Ted Cruz to his face.
Let's think about living.
Think about living.
Let's think about loving.
Think about loving.
Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey dubbing. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with a switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Love Podcast is recorded under Creative Commons license. Copyright 2015, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome. Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Driftglass.
Science Fiction University Dogface Herman sent us some clips that all have a common theme. The theme is language.
Mm-hmm.
So Dogface Herman is hoping that this starts a conversation with us. Between us, I guess. See, now I'm being very articulate because we're talking about language.
I'm feeling very self-conscious now.
I know. All of a sudden, I'm going to forget how to talk. But These are all language-related clips, and let's just get started. See if you can identify the movie or TV show.
All right.
All right. Number one.
Well, this is no picnic you've asked me on. You don't even know what language they speak, if any. It's like working out a system of communication with gollywogs. How the devil to find a point of contact?
How about pie? That's hardly the way to offer it, Stu. And by the size of that slice, I doubt if there's anything left.
I mean pie.
Now, what are you talking about?
Well, if we're getting answers, they have to have a transmitter as powerful as ours.
Go on, what are you driving at?
Well, they can't build anything like that unless they know how to make a wheel. That means a circle.
And you can't make a circle without knowing the ratio of the diameter to the circumference. Pi. I still don't understand what that has to do with... Your son's ahead of you, Cronin. What is pi?
3.1416, as I remember.
Roughly. That's it, roughly. Actually, it's 3.1415926 and so on, an infinite number of decimals.
Well, so what? We broadcast 3.1416 to Mars, and what can they answer?
Nothing. But they must be trying as hard to talk to you as you're straining to talk to them. All they're looking for is an opening. So, you don't broadcast 31416. You broadcast 31415.
And if they understand, they continue the equation.
Right.
Where'd you get that idea, son?
Biting into this.
Come on, let's get over to the lab and try it on right now.
I have no idea, but I can tell you a few things about it based on my linguistic analysis. Probably the 50s, early mid-50s, something like that.
Correct.
Mom is baking pie. Dad's
gender specific, isn't it?
Dad's a scientist, and we're talking about life on Mars. And you know who the hero is?
The little boy.
The little boy.
Who's
smart as a whip, and he understands mathematics is the common language.
He does, and that's something that comes up a lot in science fiction.
Yeah.
How do you? That came up in that Jodie Foster movie, Contact.
Contact. Yeah.
You know, right. The way they communicated was.
Hmm.
With math.
You know who else came up in that movie? Hitler.
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 Hitler. Look, Hitler. Oh, they're beaming Hitler at us. You know, that's got to be bad.
Uh-huh.
All right. This is a movie called Red Planet Mars from 1952.
Kind of, wow. The Department of Redundancy Department.
Yeah. It stars Peter Graves, of all people.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. It sounded familiar.
And you're exactly right. This is a 1952 science will take over and we will communicate with Mars. Here is what IMDb says about it.
Uh-huh.
An American scientist contacts Mars by radio and receives information that Mars is a utopia and that Earth's people can be saved if they return to the worship of God. No, really.
Wow.
Yeah, and I assume that means the white Christian version of God as well.
So America was what, some sort of atheist hellhole in 1950?
In 1952.
Really? Okay. All right. Wow.
You know, this is the anti-communism movie.
Well, of course. The dirty commies, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Revolution sweeps the Earth, including the Soviet Union, but there remains doubt about the messages being genuine as an ex-Nazi claims he was duping the Americans.
Damn Nazis.
This whole movie, Red Planet Mars, is on YouTube in its entirety. I think it'd be fun to watch it sometime. All right.
So a message about returning to the church comes from the Red
Mars.
Thus proving my theory that Bobby Jindal really is a Martian. And not a very competent one at that.
And Peeyush is Martian for pie, right?
Yes. Yes. Brilliant. That's
all right.
Lugal. That's brilliant.
How about number two? I'll bet you'll get this one.
Ah. Mel, how you doing, boy?
Walking and talking.
Is that Zoe? You still sailing, loose old bum?
Awful lot of men to haul 3 crates.
Yeah, well, I couldn't be sure my Mal here wouldn't be looking for some kind of payback. You understand?
We're just on the job, Patience. Not interested in surprises.
I don't see my cargo anywhere.
And you're not gonna till I'm holding 200 in platinum.
Oh, come on, Reynolds. I'm supposed to take it on faith that you got the goods?
It's pure, Patience. Genuine A-grade foodstuffs. Protein, vitamins, immunization supplements. One of those will feed a family for a month. Longer, if they don't like their kids too well.
Yep, that's the stuff.
Oh, yeah, that's Firefly.
Firefly. Yeah, so, everything's really shiny.
They did have a lot of fun with language in that show. They really did. I really did admire the writing a lot because it was this you can screw this up really easily, but this mixture of sort of cowboy talk, Western talk, specifically like post-Confederacy, because these are basically – it's basically the American Civil War if the Confederates hadn't been fighting for slavery.
Right. Right.
That's, you know, they take that out of the mix and just make it the big bad government versus the lovable outlaws. But they really mix the language up well with science and frontier speak and Chinese. People swearing in Chinese, which I thought was a, you know, lovely touch. Very maybe a hat tip to like Larry Niven and Jerry Pournelle. Their future universe where the two big winners are the United States and China.
Absolutely. And Dogface Sherman says that mix of Western film noir and science fiction techno babble. They loved writing the dialogue because it could be as creative as possible. Absolutely. All right.
Also, I'd also like to hat tip just in that genre generally, a book called Stand on Zanzibar.
You've mentioned that many times.
Yeah. Not that it has to be predictive, but the general collapse of the Soviet Union. And the rise of China and the United States is sort of the two great economic competitors in the world. So anyway, that's enough babble from me. Just exercising my language skills.
There you go. Try this one, number three.
There was me. That is Alex. And my three droogs, that is Pete, Georgie, and Dim. And we sat in the Corova milk bar trying to make up our razoo docs what to do with the evening. The Corova milk bar sold Milk Plus. Milk Plus Velocet, or Synthomesque, or Drencrum, which is what we were drinking. This would sharpen you up and make you ready for a bit of the old ultraviolence.
Okay. All right. In my brain, which operates far too randomly, the first thing I thought, because the music.
Yeah.
First thing I thought was, oh, that's got to be Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Yeah.
Because synthesizer. And then it was like, oh, no, that's got to be The Lathe of Heaven.
No.
It's got language in it, but it doesn't really make any sense. Oh, no, dumbass, that's Clockwork Orange.
It's Clockwork Orange, finally, yes.
I can't figure out why this would be in there, because that was a very simple, clear, plain text English language movie.
There was nothing in it that would mention metaphor at all, or be in any way anything but just a direct storytelling experience.
Yes.
No, it is Clockwork Orange. Every generation has its own slang, says Dogface Turman. But Anthony Burgess takes it to the point where it's a new language.
Yeah.
All right. Number four. I love this. This is good.
How's our patient today?
No change. The minute you open the door, he goes into his act.
Well, and what do we want this morning? Do we want something? Come on, speak. Come on, speak. Do we want some sugar, old-timer? Hmm?
You could get hurt doing that, doctor.
Oh, don't be silly. He's perfectly tame.
They're all tame until they take a chunk out of you.
Well, Bright Eye, is our throat feeling better? Still hurts, doesn't it?
See? He keeps pretending he can talk.
That Bright Eye's is remarkable. He keeps trying to form words.
You know what they say. Human see, human do.
Okay. You can get your paws off me, damn dirty ape. yeah. Okay. This is one of the all time best. This is canonical. You have to watch this movie if you haven't. Shame, shame, shame on you. The original Planet of the Apes screenplay by Rod Serling.
That's right.
Yeah. Who liked language an awful lot. We flip the language around where the apes can talk and humans can't. But it's really, it's kind of interesting to watch how one attempts to communicate, especially when, for some reason, the apes speak perfect English for some reason, which seems unlikely.
Seems but, weird to me.
But don't worry, that'll all be explained in the sequels and the prequels. Yeah. And it was. So, but yeah, go. Planet of the Apes, which was fun and did in fact have a nice strong how do we talk to each other across the species, especially when we're not supposed to have language skills at all component. Nice.
That's right. That's right. And you're so damn ugly.
Yes.
She says.
Yes.
To Charlton Heston.
Charlton, after he'd shaved.
After he'd shaved. You're so damn ugly.
I get all that right. reaction a lot. She said, damn ugly.
You talked about shaving off. Shaving.
Yes.
I said no. So.
Yeah.
You and I put on the video of Planet of the Apes and watched our kids watch the 1968 Planet of the Apes.
Yes.
Version. For the first time, which is an amazing thing to do. It's like watching the Sting, watching someone watch the Sting for the first time, mm-hmm. you know, where there's a shock ending.
Yeah.
And the three astronauts are walking across this barren wasteland. And middle child said...
Who was so 11 funny. Or so.
Was, 10, no, 11. She wasn't even 11. I think yeah. she was 9.
Yeah.
She said, that has to be Earth. They're breathing air. There has to be photosynthesis somewhere on this planet.
And I just stormed out because she ruined it for me. Ruined it.
She actually said, there has to be photosynthesis somewhere on this planet. All right.
Oh, and
as, smart ass.
Yeah. As a bit of trivia, this was one of the movies that Don Draper takes his son to.
Yes, right. That's right. And they watch it again, right?
Can we see it again? Sure.
Sure.
Yeah. But it was the they had down to the fake, like, Daily Ape newspaper that they handed out at the theaters.
Yeah.
They had a copy of that. That
details,
they were,
details, details.
And you yeah. scared that poor boy. You scared him. That's right. It was also, what's his name? Roger Sterling.
Roger Sterling took his kid, who was like 3.
He's scared of my fur coat now. I'll do Dr. Zaius. It cracks him up. He laughs like an idiot. And he does, you know, and that actor does a very good Dr. Zaius, too.
Yeah.
A forbidden zone was once a paradise.
Okay, how about number 5?
Rye of Luwani. Luwani under 2 moons. Jiri of Umbaya, Umbaya of Crossroads, at Lunga, Lunga, her sky gray. Rye and Jiri at Lunga.
Counselor.
I sense nothing but good intentions from them, Captain.
Mr. Dayton. The Temarian seems to be stating the proper names of individuals and locations.
Yes, but what does it all mean?
I am at a loss, sir.
Captain, would you be prepared to consider the creation of a mutual non-aggression pact between our two peoples, possibly leading to a trade agreement and cultural interchange?
Does this sound like a reasonable course of action to you?
Kadir beneath, Momata.
Erimatimok, in winter.
Impressions, number one. It appears they're trying their best, as are we, for what it's worth.
Oh, yeah. This is a wonderful episode. Actually, I used this one when Junior Dude was studying the Epic of Gilgamesh. Was it Junior Dude or Middle Child?
No, it was Junior Dude, for
yeah.
sure. Yeah.
This is Star Trek. This is the Next Generation. This is a nice, this was sort of Star Trek at its best.
Mm-hmm.
When it was taking what is a patently absurd concept, but playing with it in a way that was really interesting, which is a species that speaks only in analogy or metaphor. They can only draw from their own mythic past to talk to each other. So you don't say flip the switch. You say... such and such, his sails rising. And you have to know what that means. So there's all this cultural context built into language that, of course, the Enterprise crew doesn't have.
Mm-hmm.
So they, the captain of the ship, it's Darmok, I think.
Mm-hmm. It is Darmok. Very good.
takes Picard to the planet's surface to confront a predator that they will both have to unite to defeat as a means of first contact to try to get them to, you know, talk to each other or communicate with each other, which is a pretty bold thing to do. But in the course of that, I won't spoil it, something happens and Picard relates the Epic of Gilgamesh, which is highly appropriate to the circumstances. And it was a really nice moment where the writers clearly wanted to introduce some of that. Picard is very smart and he's very well read, and human myth and how important human mythology is in making up who we are and what we do. So, way to go. Good choice, Dogface Herman.
Hey, number six.
Still not feel I got the right words for him. Where they go, Coordinator? Why they go? All those words.
People didn't need them, Matt. They got out of having the thoughts, so the words went too.
Thoughts? Those pictures were thoughts.
Eh?
Yeah. That's what they felt like. Old, old thoughts you had. You know, real jumbo thoughts. But you forgot you ever had them until you saw.
Bad thoughts.
Why bad?
If they upset people.
But just the way they came out. You know, I can feel them. Now, in my head, I can think them. But I got no words for them.
They hurt?
Hurt? No. Well, a bit.
Bad.
Well, maybe we need them, just the same. Maybe we need to try them. Try all kinds of thoughts.
Maybe is a terrible word.
Okay, I have no idea. I can tell you roughly the time it came out and make some guesses about it, based, again, on linguistic analysis. This has to be in the 60s, at some point in the 60s. It has to be. And it sounds a little Ray Bradbury-ish.
Okay.
It has that. There's a certain sensibility to how almost like it seems like a 2 or 3 act character play reminiscing about stuff. But it also seems a little bit Brave New World-ish.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's called the Year of the Sex Olympics.
Well, how did I miss that?
And it's 1968 BBC. You are correct. It's television play.
Yeah.
Reading about it on Wikipedia, it says, The Year of the Sex Olympics is a 1968 television play, first broadcast on BBC Two as part of Theater 625. The writer was Nigel Neal, best known as the creator of Quatermass.
Okay, all right.
Influenced, this is hilarious, influenced by concerns about overpopulation, the counterculture of the 1960s, and the societal effects of television. The play depicts a world of the future where a small elite control the media.
Wow. Okay.
They keep the lower classes docile by serving them an endless diet of lowest common denominator programs and pornography.
Oh, shit. Don't let this get out. Don't let anyone find out about this secret weapon.
The play concentrates on an idea the program controllers have for a new program, which will follow the trials and tribulations of a group of people left to fend for themselves on a remote island.
Oh, Jesus.
In this respect, the play is often cited as having anticipated the craze for reality television.
Wow. So this is the one that created Donald Trump. It led inexorably, step by step, to Donald Trump being president of the United States in 2017.
Don't do that. Don't.
Thanks,
say
America.
Don't say that. Thanks, BBC.
Yeah, we can blame the British for this. Thank you.
Right. So, all right. Well, thank you, Dogface Herman. We have more coming up. People have been sending stuff in, so we'll be looking forward to more Science Fiction University.
And they're stuff like that. I mean, I like guessing movies and I like guessing dates and stuff like that and trying to figure stuff out. But these sort of general topic discussions,
I have really a lot of fun
with these.
There's a lot going on in the science fiction world and pop culture world. We learned this week that Better Call Saul's coming back on February 15th. Very excited about that.
Yay.
Zoolander 2 or Toolander. appears to have a better save the world from evil villains plot than Spectre.
We live in a science fiction universe.
Yeah.
We do. We absolutely do. It's really hard to keep up with the differences between science fiction and as long as you just follow the technology. If you follow the thinking, what idea are we exploring in this book? I remember yesterday the shock.
Yeah, on yeah, the shock.
on the Twitter. There was some conversation about Anon taking on ISIS or Daesh, as we have taken to call it, because it's more diminutive and insulting. And it was, what's the history of cyber warfare, cyber attack, or the conflict? And it was all crammed into one tweet or two tweets, so it wasn't that long. But he said, I'm sure Mr. Electrica, which is me on the Twitter, can give us a background. And I was able to really kind of pull together very quickly four or five or six stories that were or are canonical right up until cyberpunk hit in the early 80s. And then everybody became a hacker. Then, because before that time, personal computers weren't that ubiquitous.
Yeah.
There was no World Wide Web to speak of that anybody really wrote about in any great depth. But Shockwave Rider, which is also John Bruner. John Bruner also did Stand on Zanzibar, features a hacker, and that was from the 70s, I think. There's a story called With Folded Hands, which is 1948, I think, 49.
Wow.
Which features robots that are programmed to serve human beings, to protect them from harm. And, of course, they go so far as to protect people from harm as to prevent them from doing anything.
Right. They can't clip their toenails because they might cut themselves.
They have to sit in a room and be still, essentially. And they're so well designed and they replicate so fast, there's no way to stop them. Repent Harlequin. So the TikTok man is a wonderful Harlan Ellison story about sabotage. Sabotaging the system by sort of a lone wolf outsider who in a story in which the hours of your life are given or taken away from you by the government.
Yeah.
And so there is this whole the idea of talking about a central theme in science fiction is something I really enjoy doing, and I hope our listeners do too.
So I have one more question for you before we leave Driftglass.
Sure.
20th Century Fox announced that Ridley Scott will return to direct Alien Covenant. It's set to be in theaters in October of 2017. So my question for you is, are you going to wait for the fourth or the sixth director's cut?
I'm going to wait for Rotten Tomatoes. Because once we jumped the shark with acid in its veins.
Yeah.
With Alien versus Predator.
Yeah.
And once they turned it into just a replicable franchise, a money-making machine, I lost complete interest in either of those stories.
Yeah.
And they didn't have anything to bring my attention back to it either. So, no, I don't care. I'm glad he will make X amount of money. I'm glad he made The Martian, which is a very good movie. I highly recommend you go see it. But I couldn't care less about Aliens at this point, unless it's really good. I mean,
you said, if Rotten Tomatoes gives it, you know, their guaranteed fresh or, you know, whatever they call that, then sure, you'll go see it.
Well, based on the previews, I thought E.T. would suck when I saw it in theaters. When I saw whatever it was I was watching and they had this little preview for this movie called E.T., I thought, oh, that's going to be terrible. So my record of predicting the success or failure of movies is not great.
Driftglass.
Blue Gal.
I've never seen E.T.
Oh.
And I decided that I was going to be the one. If everyone got beamed up to the Ark, you know, and they had to preserve they decided that the way they would preserve humanity is those people that hadn't seen E.T. would be allowed to live. I figured I'd be one of those.
It's a kiddie movie.
Yeah.
You know, it's like whatever Red Planet Mars, whatever it was called.
Yeah.
You know, it's the kids are the heroes, the adults.
And I'm not saying I haven't seen clips of it and I don't know the general plot of E.T., you know, of course. And it's a Spielberg movie, so I expect it to be, you know, I expect it to be a little bit like that other movie he produced, which was really good. One about the film camera.
Oh, Super 8.
Super 8.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
It's the kids finding out that something's terribly wrong and having to fix it. Yeah. So, yeah, I get that.
Well, I haven't seen Frozen. But I can sing half the damn songs in that movie.
You sure can.
You are not allowed to escape Frozen. It is as ubiquitous.
It's a weird movie. It really is. It's unfortunate that Amy Schumer's movie didn't turn the rom-com on its head the way Frozen turned the princess movie on its head. In a very weird and almost unsatisfying way. You know, you sort of want the characters to find some sort of connection at the end that's not just sisterhood. But yep. That's what you get from this. That's it. So
that's how they ended Casablanca, right? He didn't get the girl. He got the best friend.
Yeah.
Respect.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Thank you very much, everybody. Have a great holiday. Great Thanksgiving. And I guess I'll talk about our plans for next week on the political podcast. So
yes, we have big secret plans on the podcast.
No, they're not secret.
They're big secret plans.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Love you. Bye.
Love you. Bye.
Love you, Driftglass.
Love you. Bye.